The Emerald Isle has produced many Premier League gems. Another is fast becoming one of the most exciting Irish exports in years.
I'd be lying if I said I don't, if I'm sitting in my house some days and, you know, I'm watching the telly and I think to myself, wow, I'm playing in the Premier League.
Yes, you are, Seamus, and you could be playing Champions League next season if Everton qualify. This is the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. We're here on Freak FM every Tuesday night from 10 p.m. So if you'd like to contact the show, you can mail me. I'm Dave at TalkingSport.org. It's also at TalkingSport.org on Twitter and Facebook.com/TalkingSport.org. It's that simple. Coming up on the show, we're going to be looking at Irish players on the verge of Champions League football. We're also going to open up a can of worms on Irish football in the Championship, League One, and would you believe it, League Two. Just to let you know, the League of Ireland Goalmouth show will be available tomorrow for podcasts, so check it out on goal.com. There was matches on Monday night, so we couldn't record, so check it out on goal.com. Now, to kick things off tonight, I have something very special. Aged 24, she's played in the Women's Champions League. She's been a key figure already for Ireland in the World Cup qualifiers. She's also a YouTube sensation, Stephanie Roach. Thanks a million for joining me on the Why Big Football Show. Firstly, I just want to talk a little bit about the defeat to Germany. It was a roller coaster from the start. You thought that your goal had given Ireland a well-earned draw, but it wasn't to be. Very difficult to take for yourself and the whole team, no doubt.
Yes, it's a bit the famous draw against obviously number two in the world, and then for it just for them to be on the other end and score was devastating. Can't even explain the feeling. It's still kind of gutted over. Everybody is kind of only starting to hit home now that we are so close to a famous draw against a great team.
Yeah, Germany, they really are a class act, Steph. They're not European champions for nothing, I don't think.
No, God, they've won 8 times and only conceded no games or goals, sorry, and scored 4 in their opening qualifying game. So obviously we expected a hard game going into it, but we were also confident that we might get something out of it. I think we've got a great bunch of players and we're finally starting to gel as a group at the minute, and we've been encouraged to play football, which is great because we have got a lot of good players in the Irish setup at the minute. So I think the best is yet to come. It's onwards and upwards now for the Irish team.
Absolutely. To take the lead early in the game, I suppose, was a huge boost, maybe cause a few shocks, because as you said, that the quality of Germany, the team played with a lot of confidence throughout the game. It was simply just down to the class of the Germans, and we know what they can do. You guys are going to take a lot of confidence from that match, though, because I don't think there was any area of the pitch where you really struggled at all. It was a full team performance.
Yeah, definitely. I think Louise giving us the early goal was brilliant as well, because it kind of settled us and gave us confidence throughout the game to maybe think that we could go on and get something. Keeping it 1-0 to half time as well was a good achievement. I mean, Johnny didn't really trouble Emma at all. She made a great double save in the first half. That was about all they had. So I think as well their second goal should have been disallowed. But I mean, football's a cruel game. We all know that. So now it's get them, you get them or you don't. But I think we're lucky not to get on out of the game. And as you said, the team played really well. There was no fault all over the pitch. So I think there's more to come from Irish football, and hopefully we can get the results against Russia now in May.
Indeed, it was a thrilling game altogether, and one of the things I did notice, Steph, is that there was so much about it on Twitter, and games like these really show how women's soccer is one of the fastest growing sports in the world. It was really remarkable the amount of coverage it got, both at the game and online.
Yeah, definitely. I think the fans were brilliant as well. Like, I think that's one of the best. Obviously the score is all against Germany, and any game would be brilliant for them. The fans and everything that scored was just amazing. I've never had such a good feeling, but obviously to go down to the end and they scored, it kind of took it all away again. But as I said, we've got a lot of coverage. I think Germany coming to Ireland is obviously going to bring a lot of attention on the women's game. So I think a lot of people were more interested in seeing Germany than seeing us. But as I said before, we put it up to them really well. And I think in the end, we probably would like to think we're a better side for most of the game. And again, we're unlucky not to get out of the game. So hopefully now the eye on the Irish game, our Irish women's team, will still be there now for Russia, and we'll get the same support we did against Germany.
100%, Steph. I mean, that German team, they've scored 43 goals already in this group campaign. It really is remarkable. I think a lot of confidence can be taken. And as you said, bringing it into the home game against Russia on the 7th of May, no doubt the girls are going to go into that clash full of confidence.
Yeah, definitely. I think before the German game, I think Sue even said herself it was going to be a bonus point if we got anything out of that game. Because I think, as I said before, Russia or Germany have scored 40 goals before we played them, hadn't conceded. We're obviously not going to be favourites going into that game, so we were confident enough that we had nothing to lose. And as I said, we've done really well against them, so going against Russia now, that was kind of our main focus. We want to try to finish second in the group, and I think we're doing really well to head towards there now at the minute. So hopefully we can beat Russia at home and get some home support and get more coverage on the game. And as I said, it was actually shown on Tanta as well, which is great. So hopefully now we might even get a live game.
Yeah, hopefully. I think there's a lot of people in Irish football really kind of beating that bandwagon, and hopefully we will start seeing a lot more of the games. At the start of the campaign, Steph, it seemed like you were dealt a very tough group, which you girls were: Germany, Russia, Slovakia, Slovenia and Croatia. But as you said, a great position at the moment, second on 7 points. It's looking good.
Yeah, definitely. I think we started off really well, but obviously when we seen Germany and Russia in the group, it was always going to be tough. But as I said, we've had 2 training camps now in January and February, January and March in Cyprus too, so we're raring to go. We're fully fit. I think we're the fittest we've ever been, to be honest. You could see that on Saturday against the Germans. Like, we didn't look out of place at all. So I think, as I said before, it's onwards and upwards now. I think everything is to come for women's football in Ireland, and it's going to keep on growing and we'll get better and better.
Yeah, and for yourself, Steph, you know, you've been with Ireland right up from under-17s level. A prolific striker like yourself, how does international football feel? What's it like playing for your country? Hugely experienced you are at club football at such a young age already, but do you find international football an even greater step up?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, international football is just fantastic. There's no better feeling than pulling on the Ireland jersey and knowing that you're representing your country in any sport. I think any sports person will tell you that. But being a footballer, obviously, I'm delighted to be able to play for my country. And obviously, when you score a goal for Ireland, it's no better feeling. So I was delighted to get the goal. Obviously, disappointed not to get the draw in the end. But there's no better feeling than playing for your country. Any of the girls will tell you that.
Yeah, indeed. A couple of good goals, actually, for Ireland throughout your career so far. I think, was it your first senior goal in a qualifying win over Kazakhstan to score the winner late on in the game? That must have been very special.
Yeah, that was actually around the same time as the German game as well. I came off the bench around the same time as well. So, and that was for Noah when Noah was in charge. And we were drawing 1-1 and came on and scored the winner. It was obviously a great season. And at the time, it was an important goal for us as well. So, obviously, I love scoring goals as a striker, but to score a goal for the country is special, and especially kind of showed that against the other day as well, because I went a bit crazy when I scored.
Ah, yeah, you gotta lap those things up. I mean, you've scored a lot of goals throughout your career. You've played for the likes of Stella Maris, Dundalk, Raheny, and now Piemont. Have you always wanted to be a striker growing up?
Yeah, I always was. My brother used to play up front for his local team at the time when I started playing football, and the other side on the streets all the time scoring goals. So it was always a dream to try to play for Ireland up front, and I've finally been getting the chance the last few years, and as you said, I've scored a few goals and a couple of important goals, so I mean, it's a great feeling to score for the country. But to score in a tight game as well and get the winner against Kazakhstan with first goal was obviously fantastic. But hopefully now I'll keep getting a chance up front and I'll be able to score more and more goals or two.
Yeah, and Piemont United, you know, they've been getting great attention as well over the past few years. No doubt you're really enjoying it there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think Eileen's done a great job with us over the last few years, getting to the Champions League twice, qualifying for the knockout stages against PSG, which was a fantastic experience. Like, there's nothing better than getting that. This is the top team playing against them in Tala Stadium as well, actually. We've gone really well for Piemont. Obviously, we're not doing too well this year, but Raheny probably favours to get the league now. But,
sure.
We'll be back next season.
Indeed. 2011, as you said, you mentioned that Champions League, a really remarkable season for yourselves in the Irish Women's National League. And I think you got the Golden Boot or something that year by scoring 26 goals. Impressive. How did you feel? That must have been just the start of what was to come further down the line.
Yeah, well, I kind of really enjoy playing with Pima. I think the football we play is brilliant and it suits me where I play. And obviously playing with the likes of Anya, Sarah, Julie, like, just, I'm always going to get chances in games, you know, that kind of way. So
yeah.
I'm just happy enough that I was able to finish them. And as I said, playing with females is a great privilege for me as well. So.
And playing in the Champions League, do you feel that we can get to the stage here with women's football in Ireland and the likes of Piemont United that we can compete with the top teams, like you said, taking on PSG and that on a regular basis? Because Piemont were very, very competitive in playing at the top level of club football. Can we get there, do you think, over the next few years where we will be able to compete on a regular basis?
I think, to be honest with you, we're getting there slowly but surely now at the minute. I think we started with the Irish team, I know we started strength and conditioning training, which I think is a big plus because it's what we've been missing at the minute in well, over the last few years, you know, I've been living, and all myself, it's kind of given me a boost over the last few months, even just starting to train with the Irish team. We train every Friday night now in Abbottstown, their own gym work and football. So I think the more strength and conditioning we can get into the women's game, because as you know, like, it's a big plus to like the likes of Germans,
yeah,
and then they're built like a team, so obviously we need to get to that stage as well. Like, and I think footballing wise, we're good footballers everywhere in Ireland, so I mean, it's just kind of a little extra bit now that we need to fill in, and hopefully we'll be able to compete on a regular basis, as you said.
And I think it's probably fair to say, Steph, that you're part of a generation where the media coverage around the women's game in Ireland and around the world has just improved. It's getting there, you know, as they said, it is one of the fastest growing sports in the world. Is there still a challenge, though, do you think, here in Ireland to get more media coverage towards it? I know anytime there is a big game like the Germany game, it does get a lot of coverage among the newspapers and that. But as you said, the aim will be to get more games televised and that kind of thing, I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it has grown an awful lot. I remember when I first started off, we didn't get much coverage at all. But extra time body as well are doing really well at the minute. I come, like, promoting women's football in Ireland, so that helps. And I think, as I said, it was shown, delayed coverage of the matches shown on Saturday, so hopefully now the aim would be to try to get a live game on TV. And I mean, shown over the last few years, even with the men's league in Ireland, were TV shown games, so people like football in Ireland in general, not just women's football, at a higher level, which is great, because I just think that it deserves it. Like, I mean, if you look at the Premier League in England, like, it's so much focus on that. Obviously it's a bigger league and that, but I think football in general, not just women's football, should be better televised in Ireland. Hopefully now we'll get women's football out there as well.
Yeah, hopefully we will. And your fantastic goal against Wexford brought some great publicity around the world to the league. It was we were kind of lucky there was some form of recording of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think we weren't expecting the reaction it got at all. Well, I wasn't anyway. We just kind of thought maybe you'll get a little bit of cue for and stuff to see it. And like before, the people who retweeted it and talked about it, like, it was just crazy at the time. And as you said, it gave the Women's League a lot of promotion and a lot of focus was put on it, so it was great. And I mean, it was good for women's football, it was good for myself, and I'm just happy it got the coverage that I did get. And as you said, that it was caught on camera, which was a lucky break as well.
Impressive for yourself though, Steph. I mean, the original video, I was looking at it today, it has over 2.4 million views on YouTube, and you know, that's more than some well-known musicians and pop bands out there today.
I know, it's crazy actually. I don't think it actually had hit me how much it had got, because it was just crazy to think that it got so many views on it on a goal. You know, like, on the way, it's just,
yeah,
I don't know.
It was a remarkable goal, in fairness. And, you know, I think it would have, no matter who would have tweeted it or that kind of thing, I'd say any goal like that would always get a huge amount of hits on it. You're not a one-trick pony either, though, it's probably fair to say. I mean, you have scored a few crackers. I've seen quite a few of them online and that. Do you feel you just have the confidence to go for it? I seen another goal I think you scored. It was a lob, a long-range lob and that kind of thing. Is it just something that's in you that just says, I'll have a go, and luckily enough they do end up in the back of the net?
Yeah, I would be to try different things. I mean, if it don't come off, it isn't, I don't always look too good, but no, I am a type of player who'd be confident enough to try different things. Like, I've worked on different things throughout playing, like, so, but I'll always be confident enough to have a go from outside the box and maybe try something that no one else would. But as I said, I was just lucky enough that they've come off, and even the goal that went on YouTube, I mean, that was just lucky that I was caught on camera, and it's got the viewing that it's got, like, so I would try an awful lot of difficult things that come off sometimes, which is good.
Indeed, I look forward to seeing a lot more of them, Steph. Just before I let you go, what about your plans for the future? Are you hoping to continue the way things are going and onwards and upwards? Would you be interested maybe down the line of trying your hand overseas? There also seems to be a good crop of women's footballers moving to the Scandinavian countries. That seems to be quite thriving at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot of the girls actually root a little, Jonas, is playing for a Norwegian team, and obviously Shannon and Diana playing over there as well. Louise too, there's a lot of the girls have been over there over the last few years. So I don't know, to be honest with you, I haven't really thought about it. I haven't been approached. So at the minute, I'm just happy where I am at Pina. So I'd obviously love to test myself and maybe go and play even for a year in professional setup. But at the minute, my focus is the Irish team and to keep getting better over here and hopefully try to put myself on show. And maybe get a deal somewhere. But as I said, I'm happy at Fremantle. I love playing for them. And my main focus at the minute is trying to get Ireland to the World Cup.
Well, listen, you are totally going about it the right way. A terrific performance against, in a defeat to Germany, but certainly the group is looking exciting. I'm looking forward to checking out your next game. And, you know, I think a lot of Irish football fans will agree that you're not only a wonderful goal scorer, Steph, but a terrific ambassador for Irish women's sport in general. I wish you the very best for the season ahead.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. Get involved with the show. Email dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Chat to you soon. Well, this week the news broke that Chris Hughton had been sacked as Norwich City boss. Youth team boss Neil Adams will take over for the rest of the season in a bid to survive the drop in the Premier League. I'm joined by our Norwich compatriot, John Rogers, writer of the Wes Houlihan song. John, the last time we spoke, you told us that Canary fans were not too happy on Chris Hughton and would be happy to see him gone. First and foremost, what are your views of the sacking? And more importantly, what did you make of the timing of the sacking? Did they get it right?
It's a sad ending to a really nice man. But if you ignore his character and his kind of stature of this kind of this good relationship he has with many people he's worked with in football, he didn't bring us successful or nice football, sadly. A lot of Norwich fans said if he great football and lost, that's fair enough. If he played poor football and won, again, that's great. But unfortunately, we were playing poor football and losing too often. So I think it was the right time, personally, because at the current stage, especially at Norwich and at Carrow Road, the atmosphere has been pretty poisonous, really negative, and the kind of the club it feels like it just disappeared a bit. So I can understand people from especially outsiders who were looking in, and a lot of footballing pundits have kind of questioned the decision. But if we want to stay up and we want to make the players and the fans enjoy their football again, I think it was the right decision, actually.
Yeah, because you were saying about if you want to play nice football and lose, that's okay. If you want to play poor football and win, then that's okay too. And Chris Hughton kind of delivered neither. I was thinking along the lines there when Wigan went down last season, playing really attractive football and picking up a cup. Had you guys playing like that and still gone down, do you think that would have been enough for the fans?
Probably not, but I think it had been a lot less aggressive in the crowd, especially the last game, that the atmosphere was awful. It really, really was. And I think if we were playing attack, you know, we're losing 4-3, I don't think we wouldn't be happy, obviously, but we'd accept, you know, what Chris Hughton was trying to do, and things weren't, we just didn't have enough quality to kind of beat teams, because, you know, it's a tough league. But to have nothing, to lose 1-0 to West Brom, and they had like one shot on target, and it's just not the sort of football we want to see at Norwich, and I think it was time for him to go.
Yeah, it's 6 games, though, or something like that, left in the Premier League. Do you think the board maybe felt, John, that they were looking for, you know, I know Adams is coming in to take control for the rest of the season, but do you think it was a case where they made the decision that if something fresh was brought in, there might be that, you know, the bounce-back ability when one regime ends at a club?
Hopefully. I mean, it's difficult to say. You never know what's going to happen. I mean, Neil Adams is well known by a lot of Norwich fans. He used to actually work on BBC Radio Norfolk, which a lot of the tabloids have kind of grabbed hold of and called him the Alan Partridge of football managers. But he was a very enjoyable and knowledgeable co-commentator. But then he kind of got a gig working in with the kids and the academy, and it grew from there. Then he took over the youth team managing, and he won a cup with the kids against Chelsea, who has spent millions of pounds on their youth team. So he knows the club, he knows the players, he's well media trained, obviously, because he spent a long time on BBC Radio Norfolk, and I think he's tasted success. And I think he'd be quite a good little signing as a manager, you know. He'll surprise a lot of people. He's come across in the interviews that he's had today is very, very focused, and I think he'll do a job. I think he's going to surprise some people.
He's got a stiff job ahead of him, there's no doubt about that. Just going back to Chris Hughton, John, how would you reflect his tenure in charge? He came in after being sacked at Newcastle, and Paul Lambert had just left you guys for Villa.
I would describe him as probably the most yo-yoing manager I've ever come across. I mean, he wasn't the sort of manager, who wanted to be an explosive football team. He liked the tactical side of things. He liked playing chess games with Norwich. A really good example is the 2-0 game we had at Sunderland, one of the last wins that he had. It was a typical, perfect Houghton performance. It was tight, it was defensive, and it was clinical. We scored the goals and just shut up shop. I kind of lost my patience with Christian about 6 weeks ago because that constant yo-yoing of performance. We were winning at, I said, with Sunderland, then we lose 4-1. Against teams that are down the bottom, like the Southampton game and the Aston Villa game, and it's going to go on and on. There was never a string of results put together. He didn't put two wins together. It's been about 18 months of Norwich manager. That's what's not good enough.
Consistency is the key. So would you put that down to the reason why? I know the last time we spoke, you made the point that Norwich fans were getting a little bit fed up because of this yo-yo kind of approach. And what about his squad selections and the type of football that he was trying to play? Was he trying to be dogged at times, or every game was approached differently and that maybe worked against him?
We've had a few injuries over the thing, but every team does. I can't think of him putting two teams out consecutively throughout the weeks. I mean, the 2-0 win against Sunderland was great and everyone was happy. We walked away. He put out the same side. Nearly, we had one injury, but he put out the same side against the next and we lost. And then he changed the side again. It was a never consistent. I don't think he knew what his best 11 was. And that was the biggest problem throughout his whole tenure, I think.
Yeah, from an Irish point of view, John, I know a lot of fans were a little bit disappointed with the Wes Houlihan debacle earlier in the transfer window, where he felt that he wasn't getting game time under Houghton and requested to leave. And, you know, I know Wes wasn't too happy that it was made very difficult for him. A lot of pressure on Houghton with incidents like that happening right through the season.
He actually came back after I spoke to you last. He actually came back into the side, and I think he started the last four games. He played very well. A couple of them, he played pretty awful the last game against West Brom. His touch was uncharacteristically awful. He was bouncing off his foot all the time. It wasn't a good performance from Wes. And even Pilkington, he's disappeared. We haven't seen him play. I don't think he's in the squad, I don't think, the last two or three games. So I think he might be leaving Norwich at the end of the season because his contract's up. The Wes that we know and love is he just sits behind a striker and just busying around in the middle of the park. You never know where he's going to go and what he's going to do. But he's been pushed over to the left-hand side.
Yeah, I was quite surprised at that one myself, John, when I was looking at the highlights of games and that. I really didn't think that was his preferred position in any way.
No, but I don't think Hugh could find a way to put him in. He needed him in the squad, but we also needed a two strikers up top, and we needed a two or three people at the back. So there was never really a place for him. We had a decent right winger with Snodgrass, who's been scoring goals for us recently. And the only place to kind of put him was on the left wing, but let him kind of drift across, which he was doing. Unfortunately, that left quite a big gap on the right hand side for the opposition, and they kind of took advantage of it too many times, unfortunately.
Do you think maybe, looking now forward, the likes of Wes Houlihan and Pilkington, as you mentioned, could be on the way out of Norwich, regardless of what happens at the end of the season, whether you guys stay up or go down? What about Neil Adams? Do you think he might make wholesale changes in the short time that he has to keep you guys up?
The only good thing about kind of changing our manager right now is that Fulham have no idea what team we're going to put out. I don't think the players know what team they're going to put out. We don't know what team they're going to put out. Whether Pilkington will come back in, whether Houlihan will play in his favourite position, where he'll play two up front, one up front, 55 up front. I don't know what he's going to do. No one knows. And it's an interest. But I'm pretty sure that Pilkington is going. I'm pretty sure that Houlihan will be going at the end of the season. I don't think there's any Irish players left, so you probably won't talk to me again.
We'll see. You never know. There could be always a few lying in the lurch deep in the reserves, or perhaps coming through the youth setup. You never know. For the summer, do you guys think you're going to get a couple of players in? I mean, it's going to be hard when you haven't appointed a permanent manager.
Again, we don't know if he's the interim manager.
Yeah.
That was asked in a conference and the press conference today, but the chief executive said that he didn't know, and it's up to Neil Adams whether, you know, how well he does. I honestly do think if he keeps us up, they'll have meetings, I'm sure they will, and I don't know what's going to happen. I think no one knows. That the whole, even the next week is a mystery to us, and you know, so what happens from now on is anyone's guess, and it's up to the players and up to the management now to keep us in the league, however we do it, even if we have to rely on all the other teams losing. I just think if we can do anything just to keep in this league and use, obviously, the budget that you get from being in the Premiership and push on from there.
Indeed. I was just thinking when you were saying about Neil Adams, I'm hoping it's not going to be a case of the Ricky Sprager at Sunderland, where he did very well and then they gave him the permanent contract and then they realise, oh, it's not really working out. But you think Adams is a little bit different?
He's been with the club for 20 years. He knows the area, knows the play, knows what sort of football that Norwich fans like to see. We like to see attacking, keep the ball on the ground, quick passing, you know, the sort of football that we've been used to for such a long time. And so when Chris Hughton kind of brought this play to advantages, you know, putting the ball into the corner and moving the team up and then looking for set pieces and scraps of goals and then not conceding many, just wasn't the football for us, and I just don't think it worked. And it's a shame to see him leave. He's a great man. Many people know that he's a great man, but great men don't always bring great football, unfortunately.
That's true, and particularly the way you guys want to play. Just before I let you go, John, what kind of club could you see Chris Hughton getting a job with? You were saying the way he plays there, it's more kind of he likes a dogged approach, and it's like a game of chess almost. Somebody like Stoke maybe would suit him?
I don't know. Probably not Stoke. It sounds a bit ironic, but I think he needed better players that we could obviously, you know, we could afford to be able to kind of produce the sort of that would be successful. We were relying on our strikers who weren't scoring goals. So you just need that little bit of extra skill and talent that maybe a bigger club, like Spurs maybe. They're conceding goals, but they're scoring goals. And they're playing right now. The last time I saw it was 1-1. But if that kind of dogged defensively system that he brings into sides to stop them conceding goals, and then just let their natural talented strikers do what they can do. I don't know. Maybe someone like Spurs. I don't think he'd go too far wrong with them. He's got a massive history with Spurs.
He sure does. Yeah.
And probably every single Spurs fan is probably now saying, God no, but never mind.
Well, linking him with Spurs, John, has certainly finished it on a positive note. Thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show, and hopefully we will get to do it again very, very soon.
Okay, thanks very much, and David.
You're listening to the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. Get involved with the show. Email dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Chat to you soon. Three, possibly four Irish players on the brink of Champions League football. I'm delighted to be joined by James Carew of Pogue McGull. James McCarthy, Seamus Coleman, Aidan McGeady, hopefully Darren Gibson next year if he gets back to full fitness, maybe Shane Duffy even back. But Everton are having a fantastic season. We all had a feeling that they would drop off, but that they've just proved us completely wrong. They've got a really good team and worthy of a Champions League place.
Hiya, Dave. Yeah, I think after last weekend's result over Arsenal, Everton fans themselves were maybe not expecting it, but they're calling it the best performance of the season, and they look full value. They have a tough run in, but if they clinch Champions League, certainly over Arsenal, they'll do it on merit, and it's great for obviously our Irish contingent.
I was reading this week, people were saying that 2/3 of the world is covered in water, the other third is covered by James McCarthy.
Yeah, and I think I've heard that phrase applied to Paul McGrath, so he's in great company there. But McCarthy's having a storming season. Even just this week, his club mate Gareth Barry, who obviously would be highly regarded in England, has said McCarthy's one of the best midfielders he's played with. So that's high praise indeed. And myself and yourself, David, have talked about James McCarthy for a long time.
Yeah, since he was at Hamilton.
It's hard to believe he's still only 23, Dave.
Oh, it's scary. It's scary. He covers every blade of grass.
He's just getting better and better. And I think even his involvement, the involvement of Roy Keane with the Irish setup, is only going to bring a player like McCarthy on and on. And to have pointers coming from him, and he really could be. His club manager Roberto Martinez says he could go on to be one of the great midfielders of the Premier League. Now that's putting pressure on the lad, but he's certainly got all the attributes and he's having a great season.
He plays every minute of every game for Everton. It's really remarkable.
It is, and even to go back to Trapattoni gave him his chance eventually after everything that went on before, and it felt like he was being stifled under Trapattoni. He didn't express himself. You couldn't say he played excellently in every game, but I think this season especially, we can only see the best from him from an Irish point of view. And as we said, if Everton get to the Champions League spots, a lot of it will go down to McCarthy's performances and obviously Coleman as well.
Yeah, Seamus Coleman looked like he was doing a Gaelic football solo up the pitch against Arsenal, and then later in the match when they were in exhibition mode, having scored three goals and just running down the clock, I think we've seen it, this cheeky Zidane style flick around Santi Cazorla, who responded with his arms in the air. What can I do about that? He's a special player, Coleman, isn't he?
Ah, yeah, Dave. And those clips have been all over the internet in the last couple of days. And it just goes to show that Coleman has got this in his locker, as they say. And again, probably stifled with Ireland, and we can only see the best of him in the years to come. But I think he's going to be a special, special player. And I've written before how perhaps our attacking threat, we've spoken before how we haven't got strikers so much or reliable strikers on form, but I think our attacking threat with Ireland is going to come from the likes of Coleman bombing down the wing.
Just a point on Aidan McGeady. I mean, we've seen him come on against Fulham, set up a goal. He's done quite well when he's come on the pitch at times. And, you know, we can't really complain considering Martinez does use Aidan McGeady in every game, whether it be for the last 20 minutes, the last 10 minutes. Getting game time every week is important. It shows a player that they're in the manager's plans, and especially next season, if they are in that big tournament called the Champions League, they're going to have to use the full squad, and someone like McGeady will see a hell of a lot of game time between the league, the two cups, and hopefully the Champions League.
Exactly, Dave. It's a great point. And of course, McGeady's got Champions League experience. And that's something not too many Everton players can say they've got. So it's great to see him getting game time. It looks like he's a player who possibly is only going to be utilised as from the bench. Certainly, he's finding it difficult to nail down a starting place. But as you said, he's getting game time. He's getting off the bench in every game. And if they make the Champions League next year, it's going to be all about the squad. And Roberto Martinez rates him highly. I know some Everton fans would have the same, I don't want to say skepticism, but the same questions that Irish fans would have, that amazing, skillful, quick feet, question mark over his end product. But look, he's performing in the Premier League, so that's going to bring him on. Like, we kept talking about McGeady fulfilling his potential, and no disrespect to Celtic, but he plied his trade in Scotland for a long time. He went to Moscow, which looked like a good move to bring on his development, but perhaps a lower standard, and now he's mixing it with the big boys, and as you say, he's getting on the pitch.
Yeah, it's hugely important. And just before I let you go, I know you did a piece on Everton as kind of an Irish club a while back, and I know on the Why Big Forum they have a thread about how important Everton is from an Irish point of view. It's our one chance to have players playing the highest level possible.
Exactly, and it would be great from the Irish international point of view if Everton do go ahead and qualify now. And as I said, traditionally Everton have had a strong Irish backing going back decades, even to the likes of our first win over England at their own ground, Goodison Park, when we had Peter Farrell and players like this involved, to more modern times with the likes of Richard Dunne, who was voted Club Player of the Year a couple of times at Everton. Kevin Kilbane was a stalwart there. Lee Carnsley, Terry Phelan, guys like that. So there's always been a strong Irish support for Everton. And to see, as you said, four, even five guys, if Shane Duffy, who's been doing quite well at Yeovil, though they've struggled, If he comes back in and is part of the plans next year, then it can only be good for Irish fans and for the players themselves and the international setup. So I think Liverpool fans, and they've got quite a lot of support in Ireland, won't say it, but for a lot of people, a lot of Irish fans, Everton will be keenly watched, and they'll be hoping they get the top four.
Yeah, they certainly have been Irish fans' second club, I suppose, in the Premier League to support this season. James Crew, thanks a million.
No problem, Dave.
You're listening to the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. Get involved with the show. Email dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Chat to you soon. Well, there's so much talking point on the international scene across the Championship and League One, and indeed League Two, as we're about to find out. I'm delighted to be joined by freelance journalists Pierce Corcoran, Pete Kelly of ExtraTime.ie, and Gareth Morgan, who, from a shack in Dublin, does the programmes for Perth Glory in Australia. Fantastic gig he has there. I want to start, lads, by talking about Kevin Doyle. And Pierce, I'm going to come to yourself on this. We hear he's out for the rest of the season. Does this open up a spot in the end of season friendly fixtures for the striker in form? Martin O'Neill will have a look there. He's picked Kevin Doyle in every squad he's picked so far, but there's certainly an opening now.
Yeah. Well, I think it would have been an inevitable consequence of the end of season friendlies that somebody new would have gotten their chance. I think it's just unfortunate now that Kevin Doyle is injured and he's out, that it looks like it's someone's going to be getting a chance to probably replace him, because Kevin Doyle has regressed quite significantly, I think. For like, it wasn't so long ago that he was talked about in the same vein as the likes of Arsenal, Liverpool and them. And when Wolves got relegated, his form went down as well. And he then lost his place in the Irish team. And as a result, I think fellas like Shane Long, and then you had like the likes of Robbie Keane, they kind of usurped him a little bit, and they seem to be the shining lights again.
Yeah, Pierce, he was linked with Chelsea. I remember this when there was a little bit of hype behind him, when he was playing really well for Wolves in the Premier League, and he got linked to Chelsea. There was a couple of other clubs in for him as well, but he was very loyal to Wolves, and that seems to be a bit of a trait amongst Irish players, I do think. And maybe that was a little bit of his downfall, in the sense that he was always going to be stuck in that relegation dogfight. He lost a lot of confidence, played then Championship football for a while, and is now in League One. And do you think it's gotten to a stage where he doesn't have too much more to offer the Irish team? That's not my opinion. That's just what seems to be a consensus that's out there.
Yeah, I'd probably be of the opinion that Kevin, although he was a great servant to the Irish team, I don't think he's a huge amount left to offer, especially the way Ireland want to progress as a football team. And especially with the likes of Shane Long in front of him, that I think Kevin Doyle is probably going to find it tough to get back in the side. And as a result, I don't think it's as good for anybody to have a fella like Kevin Doyle just as a bit part player, because it's a little bit of an insult to someone who was so fantastic for so long. And I think one fella that'll be Martin O'Neill will be looking at very, very closely is probably Paddy Madden, who has found his form again after leaving Yeovil. And he's one man that I think could take advantage of the end of season friendlies.
Yeah, Pete Kelly, to come to yourself on this, and just going back a little bit what Pierce was saying about Doyle, it's kind of fizzling out for him, and it would be a little bit of an insult to have him as a bit part player. No doubt he'll always answer the call for Ireland, but would you agree that it might be time to start looking elsewhere? And as Pierce was saying, maybe somebody like Paddy Madden, who didn't quite do it when Yeovil went to the Championship but has now found form again.
Yeah, I think so. I, you know, no more than everybody else, I think it's a great pity that you know, Doyle has run into, you know, a pretty poor vein of form, and also the injury is no help to him. I don't think he's that old, though, so he may get another chance again, but because he is, you know, he just seemed to have that great ability to hang in the air. Not a very big man, but was really good in the air, so you know, maybe his days are not over. As regards replacement or who might do something at the end of the season, you know, there's always the opportunity to push Walters in there, you know, rather than, you know, to pull him in out of the Siberia on the left wing or whatever he played a lot under Trapp and that.
A lot of Irish fans weren't too happy about that one, though, Pete.
Yeah, I know that, but I think, you know, Walters has never given less than absolutely 100% for us, and I think he's a versatile player. He's shown his bit of versatility with Stoke and that. There's another guy in hanging around in the background there that you know, is Daryl Murphy. You know, I would put him certainly at least in the same bracket as Paddy Madden. He might have the added thing going for him that I think he worked at Sunderland and Ipswich with Roy Keane. So, and I think Keane probably likes him. He's a big, strong lad, honest sort of guy. Is he top-class international player? No, but I don't think Paddy Madden is either. So it's, I think the bit players that come in over the next few weeks, that's all they're going to be. They're not going to be there when we start the World Cup qualifiers in reality.
That's a tough statement. Pierce, could come back to you on that. Would you agree there with Pete in the sense that it's all they're going to be? Maybe we're looking at players that are coming in, but they're only there to do a job. They're not fully international standard players. And maybe regardless of who comes in, they probably won't be knocking around at the World Cup qualifiers when they come around, or the European qualifiers when they come around.
I'd agree with Pete. I don't think the players like Daryl Murphy and Paddy Madden are the worst kind of players to call on, but I can only imagine when the World Cup qualifiers start up. I can't imagine Paddy Madden or someone like Daryl Murphy, for example, starting ahead of Shane Long. Like, I think we all know, with all the everyone and their dog know on the street, that the first two choice strikers come the first World Cup qualifier, it's going to be Shane Long and it's going to be Robbie Keane. And also in that mix, like in a 4-4-1-1 role or 4-2-3-1 role, if Martin O'Neill and Roy decide to go with, they also have the likes of Andy Reid when he comes back from injury, Wes Hoolan. So there is a kind of a good few ahead of them.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with Pierce that they have that, you know, they do offer this raw energy and the great enthusiasm and all that type of stuff. And I also would fully agree with him that, you know, Martin O'Neill has made it very clear that, you know, while Robbie Keane is fit to play and able to play, you know, he's going to be the number one guy, and it's probably going to be Long that's going to back him up. And, I would be a convinced Robbie Keane fan myself, and often been opposed to being completely biased about it. But like, you can't beat his scoring record, and he has scored against everybody. So I think it'll be a while yet before somebody pushes him out.
Yeah, I think a lot of Irish fans will agree with you there, Pete. Gareth Morgan, running the programme for the Perth Glory Club in Australia, to come to you on this one. I know you follow the Championship and League One, and indeed League Two, quite a bit. You've heard a lot of names there thrown about. We've had the likes of Paddy Madden, who you actually touted on the programme 2 weeks ago to check out a fantastic goal, which I have to say, a huge thanks that I did. I really enjoyed it. We've also had the likes of Daryl Murphy, a player that Roy Keane knows quite well from his days at Ipswich. He's scored something like 11 goals this season, and he earned a call up to the Irish squad the last time around purely based on form, I'd have to believe.
Yeah, he did, but I think if you're going to look at a player like Daryl Murphy, and especially if you're going to consider a player like Paddy Madden down in League 2 where he is with Scunthorpe. Now, he's scored, I think it's 3 goals for Scunthorpe this season, but I'm going to throw a name in there from left field that may or may not be familiar, which is John Joe O'Toole, who was at Bristol Rovers. Now, just bear with me. Bristol Rovers are struggling to even stay in the league. They're very much in the relegation dogfight, but you're going to love this bloke. He's 6'2", flowing locks, 15 goals this season, along with 10 yellow cards and 1 red card. He's a bit of a wild man, but don't forget, Ricky Lambert was playing for Bristol Rovers 3 or 4 years ago and banging in the goals for them then. Of course, he's an England international these days, whether you think he should be or not. He's come from the depths, as it were, right up to international level. And, you know, I think it's these friendlies, it's worth looking at a player like O'Toole. He certainly brings something a little bit different. And I don't see, you know, there's nothing to lose. Bring him into the, you know, into the squad, give him 20 minutes. He may be, you know, absolutely, you know, nowhere near the standard, but they've got plenty of friendlies coming up. So, you know, why not have a look at him? If Madden's in the frame, then there's absolutely no reason why O'Toole shouldn't be.
John Joe O'Toole, actually, I remember watching him quite a lot, not from the highlights, but more from Sky Sports, because Jeff Stelling used to always love saying his name, and he used to be at the end of a lot of goals, in fairness, as well. He had 57 appearances and 10 goals for Watford, and he was on loan to clubs like Sheffield United and Colchester. He played 55 games, I think, for Colchester and scored a goal, and Bristol Rovers now, as you said, and he's scored something like 15 goals in his career so far for them. It's certainly one to watch. He's only 25, Gareth. He dropped off the boil a little bit. I remember watching him before and I thought he was going on, but you think he has a fabulous head of hair, it has to be said as well, but you think he could be really in there to stake a claim?
Well, I just think sometimes, as you said, you know, he had his chance at Watford. He went through a few different clubs. And I think sometimes players, a bit like managers, they just have a fit. You know, they just arrive at a certain club at a certain time in their careers and everything just comes together and they just succeed. And he's doing extremely well. And you've got to bear in mind, this is in a Bristol Rovers side that, as I mentioned earlier, is struggling desperately even to stay in league football. So to score 15 goals in that sort of environment is pretty impressive. And you can throw in the fact that it is at League Two and it's nowhere near international level. But as I said, I think if Paddy Madden's name is being bandied about, then John Joe O'Toole could justifiably feel a bit miffed if he's not put into the frame as well.
Pierce, are we really reaching if we're going scraping the barrel down at the bottom of the leagues, with absolutely no disrespect to any players playing down there? I know a lot of them do feel they should get a shot even to show what they can do, and it can transform their careers. As Gareth was saying, you look at the likes of Ricky Lambert and players like that.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid I probably started something that I didn't mean to hear with starting the one-man campaign to get Paddy Madden on the Ireland team. No, like I think it comes down to what kind of striker Martin O'Neill will be looking for. And the reason I picked out Paddy Madden was he, although he's playing down in League Two now, he was doing the business in League One, and when he pushed up into the Championship, he had an okay start and then obviously fell away from after falling out with the manager. He also had a game
aged 24.
He came off the bench, and he does have that raw enthusiasm that I think comes from, without being any dismissive of any players that don't go through the League of Ireland, I think when a player comes from the League of Ireland, they kind of develop that energy and that will to succeed when they go over to England, and when they're given the chance to develop and progress, I think it does pay off dividends. And the striker ahead of them, and probably number one or number two at the moment, depending on what way you look at it, Shane Long, when he first came into the scene in both the Ireland team and with Reading at Premier League level, he had that same zest for succeeding and that same level of wanting to achieve something that I think if you harness it, like if Martin O'Neill can harness it, I think there's a huge potential there.
Gareth, what do you think about that? There's huge potential there. Is there any other picks down the leagues that you think could be left field, throwing a curveball our way?
Well, there is, funnily enough, in League One, if you're coming up another level, another 6'2" centre forward, if you're going for that kind of target man individual in the side, David Mooney at Leighton Orient. I know that there will be obviously League of Ireland fans around the country who will be familiar with him from his spells with Shamrock Rovers and Longford, and I think Cork City as well. He scored 18 goals for Leighton Orient this season.
It's a terrific idea, and I always watch him. I always see the goals that he scored when I'm watching the match of the day two, or not match of the day two, but the championship goals that comes on after it with Manish. The main argument there, Gareth, could be the case that when he was with Reading, he never really broke in there, and maybe perhaps dropping down to League One would be his level.
Yeah, I can certainly see there'd be some justification in that argument. But I think, it, as we were saying with John Joe O'Toole, sometimes things just don't work out for players. It's not so much that it's the level. It might just be the club at that particular time. I guess if he'd been through three or four championship clubs and it hadn't worked out at any of those clubs, then I think you could draw the conclusion that that level was simply above him. But he's dropped down to Leighton Orient and relaunched himself. And a name worth considering. I'm not suggesting that any of these players are going to end up scoring 50 goals at international level. But I do think with so many friendlies coming up and a limited pool of players to pick from, that they might be worth considering.
Certainly, it's a great conversation to have. Pete, to come to yourself, we've had a lot of curveballs thrown into the pot here, the Irish cauldron of picking players from down the leagues. We've had the best hairs of the terrific hairstyles of the likes of John Joe O'Toole. We've got David Mooney banging in the goals. Leon Best is back to scoring form for Sheffield Wednesday, a player who Trapattoni kind of ignored when he was banging them in at Newcastle, but yet he had had him in the team previously at Leicester City when he was goal shy. Maybe he could make his long-awaited return to the international scene.
Yeah, Leon Best is an interesting character because, you know, you would have said, you know, when he was showing his better form, that he would have been a cut above the other guys that we've been speaking about here. Maybe he also fits into the character, though, of the type of player that we would have called a few years ago the Plan B option, which would be when you can't play football in or around them, you loft it up to the front guy and he knocks it down. Like in the old Niall Quinn days, you know, it's banged up to him and it gets knocked down. So most of those guys you've been speaking about are those kind of route one, get on the end of the ball type striker, you know. So Best is a bit different to that. He has a bit about him, I think. You know, another name that has just come floating into my head was Caleb Folan there. I'm not even sure where he is at the moment. But he actually looked a bit like Leon Best. That's why it came into my head. But I think Best's a better player than those guys. And if he could avoid injury and do some good things, then he may get back in the squad.
Pierce, Leon Best, he's quite a determined character as well. I remember Pardew made the point that when he wasn't getting in the Newcastle team, he was banging down his door, and then he finally gave him his chance and he banged in a few goals, and he was scoring quite regularly for Newcastle in the Premier League, which was huge. And I thought at that time, before he got badly injured, he was going to really shine at international level.
Yeah, I don't know where that really came from about Leon Best. He seemed to be, I know Pete said there, like he's one of those Plan B options, but I wouldn't see him as one that could really nail down a place as a starter. And this is probably what it comes down to, is, and we've talked about a few lads here who, if at best, they'll be playing when Shane Long and Robbie Keane won't be available. But as an alternative to maybe too long or too keen, I think we need someone probably with a little bit more pace and a little bit more, maybe a little bit more agile.
Yeah, it was quite interesting, Gareth, to come back to yourself. We had another one of these strikers that emerged eligible for Ireland was Ipswich David McGoldrick right before his injury. I think he was close to getting even a call up. And, you know, we seem to be getting a lot of strikers like that seem to, you know, we'd all have doubts about them ever making it big, but they're kind of settled in their club, whether it be Championship or League One or in and around that area, and they're just kind of happy to stay there. They won't go up, they won't come down. The kind of Dexter Blackstock type player.
Yeah, I can see the point you're making. I mean, in David McGoldrick, I think of the players that we've discussed as potential, you know, potential strikers for the Irish squad. I think McGoldrick would probably be of a different standard to the likes of Madden and O'Toole. Certainly, from what I've seen of him, I think it was 14 goals he'd scored for Ipswich before. Unfortunately, he picked up his injury. I know Mick McCarthy rates him extremely highly. Superb from set pieces as well, McGoldrick, and certainly more of a complete striker than some of the players that we've mentioned, and playing at a decent level. Ipswich, as we've seen, I know he's injured at the moment, but on the fringes of the Championship playoff race. So I think McGoldrick would be one that O'Neill and Keane would certainly be keeping an eye on and hoping that he'll be back from injury sooner rather than later so that they can try and bring him into the fold.
Pierce, to come to yourself, we have seen a lot of this with strikers and Irish strikers who we did have a lot of hope for. And, you know, when we seen the likes of Anthony Stokes, he was banging them in for Falkirk and then he went to Sunderland and I think he got one goal for Sunderland and missed the bus and Roy Keane had him out pretty sharpish. And then he went back to Hibs and he banged them in again. And now he's gone to Celtic and he's scoring and creating goals, but he's not as prolific as he was before. Do we have a little too much, to quote the new Bruce Springsteen album, high hopes for these lads?
I don't know if it's high hopes or if it's probably naive optimism. If I don't want to sound too harsh on Irish football fans there, but in a way, Irish
green
football fan.
Green-tinted glasses, is that what you're getting at?
No, not necessarily. I think there's a level with Irish football fans that, like, they look at, for instance, they look at the rugby as of late, and they look at Ireland winning the Six Nations and being considered as one of the best teams. And I think sometimes, I might be going into realms that could get me into trouble here, but I think sometimes the Irish soccer fans might look at that and get a bit jealous and get them becoming maybe a bit Brie Goodry sets in, and then therefore they're looking for somebody, the first striker, whether it's Anthony Stokes or whether it's Jonjo O'Toole or whoever comes along. It's an awful lot is pinned on them way too quickly, and maybe it's a case of Ireland maybe realising where they're at, and then that being the best starting point for them, and insofar as that they're a good side, but they might, I don't think the pool of talent is that deep that somebody like, for instance, for arguments like Jonjo O'Toole, as Gareth said, that Jonjo O'Toole could be ignored completely.
And I just think, if I could just come in on the talent pool being limited, there's been obviously a lot of talk recently about trying to bring Patrick Bamford into the fold, and I certainly think if that could be done, you're looking at a player there of genuine top quality, you know. Again, head and shoulders, I'd say, above most of the other players that we've discussed. Absolutely superb on loan at MK Dons, and then more recently, a seamless transition to the Championship with Derby County. Looks as if Derby will be in the playoffs, and you know, regardless of whether they go up, he can always go back to his parent club anyway. But 24 goals from Patrick Bamford this season, well worth having a look at if you haven't seen him already. Superb movement, an excellent, excellent finisher. And I think it would be a massive coup for the FAI if they could prize him away, because I certainly think he's capable of making a real mark at international level.
Yeah, Patrick Bamford, it's quite an interesting one that you bring him up, because he actually started in the Irish youths and then made the transition to England. I don't think there's been many cases of players that have, say, started in coming through one youth system and then going to the other, ever kind of going back. It's difficult. I know a lot of, he might be in the same bracket as the Norwich player, the slick skills, Nathan Redmond, could be in that case. There's a lot of these type of players that we have to be open to, obviously, but it's very hard when they are currently playing, say, England under 21, that kind of thing, Gareth. It's a huge challenge, as you said.
Yeah, I think it would take O'Neill and Keane really laying out the red carpet, as it were, and telling Bamford that they regarded him as an important part of their plans. I think they would have to pull out the stops, and it depends whether they feel that he's worth doing that for. And obviously that would be a question for them to answer. But certainly I do take your point about players rarely going back from one to the other. But I think it would be worth some pretty serious hard words from the management duo on Patrick Bamford to try and persuade him to forego the white in favour of the green.
Indeed, we'll see what happens if anything develops on that. We won't hold our breath, but you never know. If it does, it could be a very good added bonus. Just before we go, lads, just a couple of other names that have been thrown around this week. Adam Rooney's finding a net for Aberdeen in Scotland. As you said, Ronan Murray, Notts County, he's scored 5 goals in March. I know there's a lot of good talk about that one. Callum Riley, Birmingham City, of course we know him from the Irish under 21, so there is a couple of players there, regardless of what the negative media are saying about the lack of talent there. There's something that you can work with, and I'm sure Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, who have indeed been going to a lot of games, I know a few of them were at Wigan watching Rob Kiernan, who we actually had on last week's programme. A couple of other lads, Notts County was actually watched, I think, by Martin O'Neill as well, so there's definitely players there. Pete, to come to yourself on more established players, Crystal Palace have had a real revival under Pulis, and we've seen Damien Delaney get a full season of top flight experience. Do you think there's a chance that he could perhaps unseat Richard Dunn as John O'Shea's first choice partner at centre half?
If Dunn is fit to play and he isn't hampered by injuries, then I think going into the World Cup qualifiers, he'll be the number one choice. You know, unless he really is hampered, because he has proved over quite a lot of a long period of time that he's top quality. And when he's in that green jersey and he's out there, you know, he puts in all these blocks, he manages to just get himself in the way. And I don't mean that in any way disparaging point. He is a really, really good player, and he's way quicker than he's ever been given credit for. And I think after, you know, a few wayward days early on, and I think it was Kevin Keegan that rescued him by giving him a couple of shoes up the rear end and said to him, you know, you have a real opportunity in life here if you and don't abuse it. And he has said he's grateful for that on numerous occasions. I can't see the likes of Damien Delaney, and I've seen him playing in the flesh. I can't see him replacing Richard Dunn once Dunn is fit to play.
Okay, Gareth, to come to yourself on Delaney, I mean, he has been a player that I know a lot of Irish fans have made the point over the years when he was in the Championship that they didn't really want to see him play, get into the Irish team over maybe other players. But now he has a full season of Premier League football under his belt. That's something that the Irish management team simply can't ignore.
I think that's absolutely right, especially as we've been discussing all night with a limited pool of players to choose from. You have to, if at all possible, be picking players that are playing first team football on a regular basis and are in form and at the highest level possible. And Delaney is certainly doing that. And just, I've got a point that I'd like to throw out there as well about Crystal Palace and Tony Pulis in particular. Can anyone explain to me why Tony Pulis is constantly late out onto the field to go into the dugout? He was always late at Stoke. You thought perhaps at the Britannia there was some sort of arrangement with the dressing rooms. It took a long time to get onto the field. Now he's at Palace. He's still always late. I don't understand that.
It's not a bad ritual, Gareth. Once he doesn't go down the line of Hull City and Phil Brown and bringing the having meetings, dressing room, team talks on the field in front of all the fans, I don't think they'll mind too much about that.
No, fair enough. But I think Delaney, as I said, he's in form, he's playing regularly, and I think he's got a lot to offer.
A lot to offer indeed. Thanks a million, lads. We've run out of time here on the Why Big Football Show, but don't forget you can check out the podcast. You can type Why Big into iTunes. We'll also be on talkingsport.org and many other great Irish sports soccer sites, so we won't be too far away. Remember, we'll be back here at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night on Freak FM. You can check me out on Twitter. It's at talkingsport.org and facebook.com/talkingsport.org. For myself, Dave O'Grady, have a very good evening.